The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Justin, you want to do the honors and introduce our, are we going?
Should I start with Lord? Is that appropriate?
Only if you're in church.
I like that.
How did that happen?
Dude, if that seriously is a title that you
that
have,
is
that's
my
amazing.
Actual title.
Yeah, I love
Fuck,
that.
Fuck, I love that.
So I got actually, are we on air? I can
Lord
tell you.
Lord Jason Allen Scott, everybody. Lord. Is in Lord. The studio. He is a Lord. Val-
yes.
Yeah. Well, actually one of the more interesting people we've had the opportunity of meeting with. Extremely handsome, but in a rugged way, and really, really dressed. You dress very nice.
Thank you very much.
I don't do a good job dressing myself.
You see how we do that? We had Anatone on here. He was dressed in the nines. I think we're trying to step our game up.
I don't know. I'm happy that Justin's here because it always makes me feel
like you dressed up.
I'm not the worst dressed. I'm hey, there.
Hey, well, if you guys haven't figured it out, I keep trying to bring these types of guests on to help you guys out.
Is that
here.
What so, that is?
I feel like I'm outnumbered whenever we talk
says
about
the guy
fashion.
Who wears sweats in a sport coat.
Hey, yeah, but you better believe that shit.
Close deals, bro. Close deals.
I can still pull it off, though. You know what I'm saying?
That's true. Yeah. So how did you get your Lord? How does that work?
Yeah. So I married Lady Lavana Anthea Grafton. Now, how she became a lady.
That sounds so British.
Right? I mean, she is. She was super British.
That's great.
King Henry VIII was a Catholic king. And he wanted to really screw the Boleyn sisters. Can I say screw?
Yeah. Oh, same
okay.
You know, bro. You're a mind pump lizard.
So he really wanted to bang the Boleyns. And he couldn't because he was Catholic and he was the King of England. And he didn't know where he was going to do it. And he needed a shag pad. So he went out to this house in the middle of the hills. And he said, if you let me shag my woman here, I'll make you guys royalty. So as far as the eye can see, you can have the land. And when you own land, you become a baron. Barons became lords and ladies. So purely because of that, she became a lady. I was lucky enough to marry a lady. I became a lord. And when I flew up here, I got stuck because apparently there's a Jason Allen Scott in Canada with an arrest warrant. So they threw me in this room with 262 Mexicans. And they were like, you're probably going to go back. No, they really don't.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, I don't know what I'm going to do. And the guy came over and he's like, I'm really sorry. And if you didn't have those arrest warrants in Canada. And I was like, really? I said, can you do me a favor? Can you just look up Lord Jason Scott? And he went, excuse me? It says on my passport, it's Lord Jason. And he went, oh, hold on a second. He went, oh, I'm so sorry, your sir.
Oh, your
highness,
honor.
I was like, there's no need to curtsy, although I like you on your knees. I was like, I'm out of here. Thank you so much. One hour in your airport security. It was insane. It stunk of Taco Bell, and I just wanted to get out.
Man.
And they were like, he really doesn't seem to
fit in. You
got to
use that more often, it sounds like.
Yes, it does. You do always get a table in a
restaurant. So from now on, Lord.
Lord, the Lord is here.
I love it.
Oh, I absolutely would use that. I absolutely would.
Oh, dude. You wouldn't be a Lord, though.
No.
No, you'd be a sir.
A sir. Yes.
Yeah.
Sir Squire, Adam. Sir Adam.
Sir Adam.
The Squire? Is that what you just fucking called?
I didn't say Squire. He said Squire.
I said Squire. It sounds like Squire Schaefer. It sounds like a thing.
So in other words, I'd carry your shit around? Is that what you're saying?
He's the guy that plays the flute behind you as you walk.
It could be worse. Towns could say, where's the village Elliot when you're here? So, yeah.
For sure. That
I
want to
be
like
the guy with the coconuts behind making the
sound of a horse.
Can I just tell you, Monty Python's my favorite thing ever?
Yeah. Why? Okay, so here's the thing. He's English, but he didn't make it, and he didn't own it. I love it. Every time I meet an English person, people are like, oh my God, my favorite movie. It's like some English movie.
I basically did that.
You're like,
I know you're behind that.
That silly war campaign was purely based on how I walk around. It's my entire world right there. Yeah.
So we got to talk about why you're so interesting. You are like the ultimate entrepreneur. I mean, you've started businesses and many, many different businesses, and you've helped other people, and you've worked with other entrepreneurs, and talk about that. Like, how did that start? How did you do that? I mean, you have a very interesting story.
Thank you. Most of the things I've started have started because of selfish reasons. And it's my dad's thing is everything in my life can come down to the pyramid. And the pyramid is, does it get me laid, get me paid, or make me lose weight? That's like been my big thing. So when I became single again at 33 and I got divorced, I was like, I need a wingman. I need to go to bars and pick up girls. And all my friends were married and all my friends had girlfriends and no one wanted to be my wingman. And I'd go to a club and I was like, how are they going to know who I am? That's how I'm going to get laid. Like, if they just know who I am. And which made total sense in my head. And I was like, and people were going, there's no way you're going to find a way that you can get girls to come onto you. And I was like, of course, beauty pageants, judges get laid.
Oh,
hey, like every one Trump of them, right? Right? Thank you very much. Look at Donald. He's getting it.
Hey, man.
Mark Anthony. Brilliant. Mark Anthony's like Mrs. Universe, two of them. So I was like, okay, here we go.
There's something there.
Thank you very much. So I invented this thing called Miss Clubs, where we'd go around to clubs and the girls would have to flirt. And the more they flirted, the more chips they got. And whoever had the most chips at the end of the night became Miss Clubs. But as a judge, I had 1,000 chips.
I was throwing it up in there. Oh, yes.
Hold on a second.
It sounds like our version of Mardi Gras. That's what it
sounds
like.
That's literally what it was like. That's exactly
what
it was
pause. Like. We need to pause and just, that is the most brilliant idea I've ever heard in my entire life.
So Mind Pump hosts.
Oh, you got to
what are we
going to
call it? Yeah.
You got to do like a, do something, something to do with mind pump heads or something.
So was that one of your first businesses?
So that was my, my first business. So my first business was a circus. So I know it makes no sense. I grew up in a really small, we call them like a slum, like a little slum village. So everyone knows everyone and everyone was talking about these circuses that were coming through town, but no one could afford to go. And I was like, well, that seems easy. Just give me the money and I'll get the circus. And truth be told, I only really saw as far as giving me the money that I'd go to a circus. And I came home, my grandmother's Irish, and I came home and I was like, Gran, I made all this money today. And she's like, how'd you make it? And I was like, well, I sold circus tickets. And she's like, wow, how long have you been working for the circus? And I was like, I don't work for the circus. I just thought it'd be a great idea. And she was like, really? Anyway, she slapped me over the back of the head and she said, go out and get all the kids to make up a circus. And that was my first business ever. So I had a kid pretending to be a lion, another kid with like a stick hitting the first kid, and everyone laughed. And I thought it was like a comedy show. And I did really well. And my dad was the first entrepreneur in our family. He started a metal shaving business. So my entire life, my grandfather swore that there's no such thing as an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs were just really smart criminals. And my dad was the first entrepreneur.
Kind of makes sense now.
It makes total sense,
when I look
right?
at Adam, yeah. When I look at Adam, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so he starts making money. We move out of this little slum that we grew up in. My grandfather, as it would have it, was an alcoholic, and he cut himself, and he was bleeding out, long story short. He calls my dad up, and he's like, listen, I'm going to the hospital. I want to know how you made all this money, because I don't believe you're an entrepreneur. My dad says, you went to the harbor and you found out we were taking wheelbarrows of dirt. We were going through the dirt, finding metal shavings, selling the metal based on weight and making a fortune. My grandfather was like, rubbish. Anyway, he goes to the hospital. Nurse says, you're bleeding out. You know, you drink too much whiskey. The blood's pouring out of you. He phones up my dad and he's like, I don't think I'm going to make this. You better tell me the truth. And my dad's like, what do you want to know? Like I told you before, you went to the harbor. You double checked. Anyway, third time, phone rings. I never forget, I'm sitting with my dad. My dad answers the phone and he goes, what do you mean? It's really bad. And the nurse is like, listen, he's bad. My father says, okay, we were stealing wheelbarrows. Every day, 200 to 500 wheelbarrows a day. We'd go in, fill them with dirt. They'd check the dirt. If anything was in it, we'd be like, nope, the dirt is clean. Walk on out, come back in, grab some more wheelbarrows. And that was it. Like after that, I was like, this is amazing. I can just come up with an idea and sell it. So the next business I started is I went to Thailand and I started a thing called swimming.com. And it was like, we'll teach people to swim. And it didn't work. Like, no one wanted to know how to swim. That would be ridiculous. And then God sent me the tsunami. And everyone wanted to know how to swim. And I couldn't keep up with how much was coming through.
Hold on a second. God sent me the tsunami.
He sent me the tsunami. It was like a little gift to me. He was like, you know what? I'm gonna extend this wave and it's going to make you a fortune.
When life sends you lemons.
So that's what I'm saying. You get tequila.
For that case,
you do shots. And I was like, I started every lesson by saying, if you see a tsunami, you can't swim through it, but thank you for your money. You've been teaching you how to swim. And we did really well.
Oh my God.
That blew up. That did great. Wow. Yeah. And that was the first real big business I ever made and sold. And then I started a whole bunch of the little sort of things that got like Eco Disco and Perinaise, which is a mixture of peri-peri sauce, like Tabasco with mayonnaise. And again, like such a random, easy thing, but I was like, you put Tabasco in mayo, you shake it up, and Perinaise, like peri-peri sauce, mayonnaise, and that'll do well. Sold it to a big restaurant franchise, and that did really, really well. I think it's just this idea of like of looking at something differently. So like even gym membership, right? Like this is one thing that we've all got in common.
Right.
So I go into this gym and I'm like, I really want free gym membership. And it's the coolest gym. And the girls are stunning. And they're all coming out. And I'm like, I really, I'm like, well, it's $100, $200 a month. And I'm like, I can't afford that. What if I sold gym membership? And they were like, well, then we'll give you, you know, you could work here for free. And I was like, I'll do that. I'll 100% do that. But I couldn't sell a gym membership. I just didn't have that thing where you do the cold calls and you go out to see members. And I said, there must be an easier way. So I'd go to HR managers and say, well, what if you have like a gym membership that's part of the job role and they get to hang out with really cool people? And they were like, well, what kind of cool people? And I was like, we got the coolest people in the world at our gym. It's bullshit. We didn't have anyone in the gym. It's just a shitty gym. But I was like, how cool would it be to be in a sauna with like the CEO of Forbes magazine or of this guy or that guy? And we're only taking 1,000 members. And it was a whole urgency sale. Mm. And before I know it, it's to this day the biggest pre-sale in the history of gym memberships for Virgin Gyms worldwide. I pre-sold the gym. Yeah.
You gangster.
And Richard Branson is coming up. And he's like, I'm going to hire you to be my consultant. I just went around teaching people how to make sales.
It's too bad you're not a fascinating person.
Oh, yeah.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
You just got to have a lot of balls. I mean, really. Yeah, I mean, so a lot of these ideas saying, if someone were to tell the average person, they'd be like, that's not going to work. That's ridiculous. That's stupid. But you just had the balls and you did it.
Yeah.
It's almost that easy, but it's not, right? It's still difficult. It's very hard.
The hardest part is the belief to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, you get the idea.
That's the hardest part.
That's the toughest part is convincing yourself. That's the first sale. Like, do I believe in this enough to give it a shot, to try it? And then it's that first client, that first person that goes, I'll buy it. I believe in it. It works. Mm-hmm. It seems like a good idea. I mean, this is going to sound terrible. I apologize ahead of time to all those people that I duped many, many years ago. But when I was about...
We've done many of these.
Okay, so thank God.
Don't worry.
So like at 23, where I made my first big bit of money, is I found these like Prozac pills. They call Lorian. And the side effect of them is you'd lose mass amounts of weight.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. So I would go and like make my own supplement company that was called Scott's Shits. It was just S star S. And I was like, this will make you lose so much weight. And I would just sell this on like everyone come to me and like, can we get the stuff? And before like wrestling or swimmers or bodybuilders. Oh, and they were like so laid back. Just like, it's the best pills ever. I'm so relaxed. I keep losing weight. And I was like, it's really good for you as well.
It's really good.
And I did that for about a year. We sold that business. Off, wellness clinics worldwide. I think we did quite well, and it was just that idea of like, if I bought it, if I'd buy it, if I believed in it, and I think I do believe in the pyramid of money: lose weight, get laid, get paid. You're always
the pyramid.
The pyramid.
So, what led you to where you're at now? So now we're working with. So you put on big events. Is that what you do for like celebrities and people like that?
So anything from Avatar, Dark Knight, Mamma Mia, Sex and the City. I've hosted the John Attack the Block, the new guy from Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Where was my invite, bro?
Sorry, we just nothing for that. I got nothing. I got zip.
It's all good.
So I got really lucky. I did the premiere. The very first party I ever did was a film called Miami Vice with Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx.
Right, right.
And I was a Miami Vice fan. Like I was like, oh, I can do that backwards. And I threw this party in Leicester Square in London, and it was huge, and it did really, really well. And everyone was talking about it. They're like, it was a great party to go do another one. And I went to see Warner Brothers, and they were like, we're doing this thing. It's called The Dark Knight, and we don't know how well it's going to do. But this is the style book. Come up with some ideas. And I came up with like jet black burgers that were ink injected, and like the whole thing about this dark and black, and all the girls wearing these black outfits.
Didn't
like
that
ninjas.
Turn into the Burger King? Did that?
Burger King did it. Yeah, we That's did really well. It's
oh wow.
We sold that off to a couple of places. Licensing.
I remember
licensing
that.
Was big.
God, I don't even remember that.
You don't? Oh, no. I totally remember that. Yeah, the commercials for it. Yeah,
it was good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. That's I don't remember that. Yeah.
So how did that event go with the Dark Knight? So
Dark Knight was amazing. Dark Knight did incredibly well. The film went on to be huge.
Yeah,
Warner Brothers had a really good relationship with me after that. So I got to do quite a few big Warner Brothers events. And then because Warner Brothers did well, Marvel, well, actually it wasn't Marvel at the time, but it was the first Iron Man franchise. Mm. And they came and they had a chat and I did Iron Man, which was amazing. And I think the big thing was that I could create these events that left you with a memory, that left you with this something that you talked about, whether it was the black burger or whether it was this the smell you got when you went into the rooms or whether it was the fact that I'd come up with really clever takeaway bags or goodie bags or treats or just one thing extra that they weren't expecting. Mm-hmm. And I hold a really good secret. So like some of these parties are pretty mental and I'll bite down and not say anything. And that meant I got another one and it just sort of got bigger and bigger and bigger. And yeah, that became a thing. And before I knew it, I was kind of doing mass events all over the world for like anything from, I said, Sex and the City, Dark Knight, Mamma Mia, to massive CEO events, Unilever, the launching of the Lynx body campaign, to, yeah.
Now, I'm going to be honest, listening to you with what you're doing now, I'm thinking to myself, well, he must have known someone to start. Like, you must have had a connection. Because if I wanted to do that, I'd think, well, how the fuck am I going to do that unless I know somebody?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Yeah.
How did you get that, what you're doing now, started?
So when I was working in gyms for pre-sales, I met this girl called Joe Barnard, and she was amazing. She used to sell to the Navy. So she'd go in, she's incredibly hot, and she'd flirt and do whatever. And she ended up getting this huge naval contract, and she joined me for the pre-sales. And one day she called me up and she was like, if you think you're making money in membership sales, events. There's no one in sales and events. It's just, it's prima donnas. It's really good looking girls. It's promo girls. It's promo club guys. Mm. You know, they're not selling. They're just, you know, getting the event in and then doing what they can do. If you can sell in events game, you're on another level. And I went out and I went to see all these really bad clubs and bars and I was like trying to pitch myself and it didn't work in fairness. And then out of nowhere, I got a call from this, and it was pure luck. I got a call from this woman and she was like, we got this film coming up. It's called Miami Vice. We'd like someone to do the after party for it. And it was just their first one. And once I got that and I could do it.
Then people know you.
Then it just started expanding a little bit. Someone was like, oh, is it the Miami Vice party? And I really loved how everyone had rolled up jeans and tucked in jackets. And, you know, it was all the blue pastels and you did that smell of bubblegum in every room. And can you do this thing for us? And then it was the Sweet 16 and there was a thing for MTV. And then it just kept going. But also because I'm sales, I would be on the phone. I would do cold calls all day long. I would, you know, I'd call the nearest companies, the nearest clubs. I would pitch, and I still do. I pitch every single day. Mm. And I would pitch like, I've got this great idea for this film. I believe you've got this film coming out and it's called, so what was another big film? Like Attack the Block. And I was like, I love who you've got in the film. And I know that Jonathan Ross is in it. But in my mind, I'm thinking if I can get Jonathan Ross to come to a party and Jonathan's friends with Eminem, then I can get Eminem to come to a party. If I get M2M to come to a party, I can get Dr. Dre to come. And I'm always kind of, we call it 12-step ahead thinking. It's just like, sort of judo way of thinking.
Who knows this person? Who knows 100%. That person?
And your network is your net worth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's interesting listening to your story. I know a lot of I don't know a lot, but I know a few people like yourself who've, you know, done real well for themselves and kind of started out as, you know, you got to hustle, you got to get 100%. Out there and make it happen. And it's interesting. You're telling a lot of stories from when you were younger, where maybe you were a little unscrupulous, but now, of course, as you get older, you end up learning that you have to conduct business differently in order to grow even larger. Definitely. Obviously, you've learned that lesson.
Right.
I've learned that myself. I mean, as a young membership sales guy, man, I used to say crazy shit. We used to do crazy shit in the gyms. Yeah. It was Wall Street in the gym. Matter of fact, we've talked about doing a tell-all book, you know, what it was like in the late 90s and early 2000s to work in the fitness industry in California. And let me tell you, we will burn ridiculous bridges. Like, nobody will ever talk to us again if we tell those types of stories.
We just don't care anymore. Yeah, that's the problem.
So doing that now, so now that's why you're here. You're doing some of that stuff here in the States.
Right. Yeah, 100%. So we're building an app. So the thing is that I was on honeymoon with my wife in April last year, and I read this book, and I think everyone's already read it. I'd never read it, never heard of it. Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I kept hearing about it. And I was like, okay, so what's the big deal about this book? And, you know, in between sessions, I needed something to wait and for the Viagra to kick in. And I was like, oh, I'll just read this book. And I'm reading this book before our work week and I'm saying to her, have you read this? This is amazing. And it's all about like not being there and still creating wealth. And she was like, yeah, well, I don't know if it really works. And I was like, but no, it's not about like actually working 4 hours. It's about creating things that are automated and scalable and that carry on. Mm-hmm. And that was just the thing. And then after that, I was like, okay, how am I going to come up with something? Right. And then he talks about Pareto's law, you know, that 20% that's going to bring you 80%.
Right.
And I thought, okay, 20% of what I do that brings me the most amount of money is I teach people how to sell in events, how to sell events. Like, how does it work? And I was like, if I could find a way to make that a technological piece. And then it came up with this idea for VenueMe, this app that would combine Uber with Groupon. It would find venues on a geolocator that all said, pick me, pick me, pick me for your event, your opening, your whatever. But at the same time, each one had to say, this is my special offer to choose me, that it created this dialogue medium. Mm. And I was like, I love that. That works. Like, my favorite, you guys are Instagram and podcasts.
Right.
For me, it's Twitter. It's like that constant stream of talking to anyone in the world anytime. and that dialogue. And I was like, if I can create an app piece that creates for event people, because event people are, we're in the dark ages. Like, you know, we've still got those computer screens that look like Beyonce, all flat in the front, all big in the back. Ooh, yeah. I'm like, damn it, man. This is ridiculous. So if I can come up, and no one's got an app for this. There's no, especially not in the UK. And I start speaking to people in New York and California and Chicago. And they're like, yeah, why don't we have an app that helps us find venues and events and gives us free champagne or lets us go to a place and take over a club or a restaurant or a dead space? So, and funny enough, in that world, I've got no connections, like zero connections, or at least I thought. And then the more people I sort of spoken to, they said, oh, yeah, I know this guy who used to work at Apple, I know this guy, and he started this little thing called Facebook. And I was like, wow, that'd be good. I could talk to that guy.
Yeah, he might have something to say.
Yeah. And then that's connected, but it sort of hooked me up while I'm here. And I'm pretty much seeing five people a day, every day for 7 days. Which is something else.
So you're going to be doing this for event planners, but do you see in the future how potentially something like this could get kind of do the job of an event planner, or decentralize kind of that type of job?
No, because I think most event planners are party planners. Like, they just want to plan the party. They don't want to get the business.
Express their creativity and 100%. All those things.
Details, so this would allow them the opportunity to focus mainly on that then.
That's it. They could never have to do it. So we did a survey. And we asked 1,000 event planners, what would you rather do? Give up sex for a month or make another cold call? And they all said, give up sex.
Wow.
And I was like, I'll take all that sex for your phone calls. and I was like, okay, so this app would make you never have to pick up the phone and call a blind company or a blind film company or try and pitch at your venue to someone random. It would do all that for you. So sales would just stop. So we would no longer.
It's brilliant. You're creating the middleman. You know? Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the hope and dream, is that we can create something.
It's almost fascinating that there's something that doesn't exist like that already.
That's
in all other every other business. I feel like we've kind of figured that out. You know, there is, and I can't believe there's nothing like that right now. How smart is that?
Well, so
this is something that's you're making right now. You're in the middle of it. Where are you guys at in it? Did you guys just start?
So I started off with the idea and the concept, and I thought that I would need something called a CTO, which I'd never heard of. All right, this chief technical officer, someone that could talk to me about the technical piece and how it works. So I took on this guy, and he seemed to be absolutely shit hard at what he did. And I kept doing these events where I spoke about stuff, and then I'd pitch venue me somewhere in it. But he never turned up to any of these events. And eventually I got invited to this big tech event, like hackathon. And he pitched up, and I was like, wow, amazing. Finally, I got you with me. And the very first tech people we went to go speak to had this AI app called Roger. And I said, this is my CTO. And this guy went, oh, amazing. What language are you building the app in? And he went, English. Mm. And the guy was like, no, what language? And maybe Spanish. And I was like, so I pulled him aside and I was like, so do you know anything about technicals? And he was like, well, kind of. Like, I've read Wired magazine. And oh shit. So on the podcast, I've got a little podcast. And on the podcast, I have to fire him. Because I realized that I hired this guy who he's bullshitted his way into the job. And he actually doesn't know anything. He's like, he's learning as I'm learning.
How long did he think that was going
to
last?
He survived 3 months. I've been dragging him to events and I've been pushing him forward.
No.
And he's absolutely bullshitted brains every time with me, like throwing things in. I'm like,
this reminds me of that guy that was doing the sign language, you know.
But like Nelson Mandela's funeral? Oh, that's exactly what it's like.
It's like the funniest, worst thing I've ever seen all at once.
It's like a charades game. Like, three words, right. Movie, sounds
it's like.
Like,
you know, what are you just doing? Making shit up, you know, like, hey, they don't know what I'm doing.
Well, you got to hire that guy for something. If he got you that long for 3 months.
Right, he's
got
to be good in sales.
Great at sales. Yeah. I'm totally going to hire him back as a salesman.
Yeah, move him over to that department.
So, well, maybe, but I didn't. I fired his ass.
So it's just a little dishonest.
It's really dishonest. And it freaked me out because I was like, shit. I got him really, really drunk. And I was like, by the way, how did you know all that stuff? And he was like, I used to watch this TV show called Silicon Valley. Shit, man. Well done to you.
I love that show.
Well, now I'm going to have to watch that.
Yeah, no, it's a hilarious show. It's nothing you're going to get like any education from, I'll tell you that.
Well, he did. He was pretty, like, he was throwing out some things to me, like buzz terms acquisition.
And yeah.
Clack, and what's the chaff on that? And I was like, I don't even know what that is. Yeah. So I'm doing this completely and utterly by myself.
Wow.
And I'm, in fairness, I'm using the podcast as a way to lubricate my opportunity to meet people.
Go ahead and plug your podcast. Give us the name.
Sorry, thank you. It's the Guest List Podcast.
Okay.
Who's on the guest list? Mm. And I'm purely using it because I'll get to speak to someone and then I'll get to pitch them and they can say, well, have you thought about this? And have you thought about that? And then I'll add that to my business plan quickly. Like, have I written that down? And in a way, it's scary because I have been lucky enough to make money in all these other things. And now I'm just throwing it into the freaking app like this really, really angry ex-wife that's just, give me more. Give me more. And I'm like, can't keep handing money out, babe. Stop ordering the guacamole at Chipotle.
So this,
that one's close to home.
Yeah, exactly. We all suffer from that.
Yeah.
So the podcast itself, like, you're just kind of telling the story of this whole process.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like one-on-one. Like, so you're taking it with you, like, to everywhere. These meetings and stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So I got an interview with a guy who's a big investor all around the world, and we're 33,000 feet in the air, and I've managed to absolutely bullshit my way into business class just so I can sit next to him. And then I've got this recorder on and I'm pitching him Venue Me, and he's turning around and saying, well, if I were you and I was pitching it, I wouldn't use this word, and I try and think of it in simpler complexes of terms and not so complex. I'm like, okay. And then he's like, are you recording this? And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm recording it for my podcast. And he's like, right, I don't know what a podcast is, but sure, yeah, record that. I'm like, thanks, man, thanks very much. And so I'm doing that, and like, even the very first one, it's just dropped into a conversation of like me and this woman who started the biggest event agency that's worth hundreds of millions. And I was asking her, like, how do you do it? Because it is all an education. Like, every day is a school day. I'm just constantly learning stuff. And in my industry, there's very little that I can still learn because our industry it's kind of easy. It's get them in, get them drank, get them fed, get them home safe. Like, that's the whole piece of events.
Mm. That's, you know, this, have you heard or have you listened to the podcast Startup? Have you listened to that podcast?
So I just heard it yesterday.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So I was talking to this woman. I was explaining my story and she went, so basically you're doing a podcast on starting your own company? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, have you heard of this thing called Startup? And I was like, no.
Yeah.
I was like, I only listen to Mind Pump, Joe Rogan, and like one other show. Yeah. And she's like, oh, you really have to expand that. I was like, right, okay.
Like, nah, I'll I'm good.
No, I'm good. Like three. Yeah. How much time do I think I have? Yeah. So I've listened to it yesterday and it was amazing.
Oh yeah.
Gimlet Media.
I don't know how far you are now, but that's definitely a cool.
Are they still posting episodes? Because I thought they
still, yeah, they went on hiatus.
I fell off. It was, yeah. But I know that what he'll do the same thing we did. He'll listen to it and your wheels will start turning. You're like, oh, okay, this gives me some really clever ideas on how I should structure this. So
yeah, I mean, when it's very well produced. I mean, it's definitely incredible. A higher quality production. Well,
what is that term, where that phrase entrepreneurship is what, jumping out of a plane and then making a parachute on the way down?
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly. It, right? It's, I mean, it's, we started Mind Pump. None of us did this. We never been in front of a mic.
I can't even talk.
Amazing.
Yeah, we've never done anything like this before, and then we just said, okay, let's go for it.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of, when I talk to people like you, that's what they all have in common.
Yeah. Because
then you ask them, well, what made you do that? Well, I don't know. I just did it. Yeah. And why'd you think you could?
It's an opportunity.
I never thought I could.
Put yourself there. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, I was talking to someone at this body expo last year where I bumped into Craig. And I was saying, do you listen? Obviously, I was asking everyone. Like I said, I could walk up to Dorian Yates. And I was like, do you listen to Mind Pump? He was like, no, should I? And I was like, yeah, you should. We should definitely.
Oh my God, is Dorian Yates listen to Mind Pump?
So next time I speak, I'll find out. And I was talking to someone about the show. And they were like, I remember listening to it when I first started. And Justin never used to speak. And you guys were just constantly on him. Like, yeah. Justin, do you want to say something? And all you heard was Adam going, should we introduce ourselves, Sal? Sal, could you take a second? could you just mention who's in the room, please? Like, and you've come so far since that. It's amazing.
Yeah,
in some ways we have, in some ways it
no, we would just I you know, I think my girl is probably one of our biggest fans, and she definitely doesn't bullshit me. She's the first one to call me on my shit, and she's also the first one too to let us know that, like, you know, the evolution of doing this has been pretty crazy. I mean, when we first started, we were full of energy, and I think that kind of carried us. You know, we were excited about what we wanted to talk about. We were excited about our mission. We knew that there was a need for this in the industry. Mm. So I think our passion carried us through like the first 100 episodes or so. And then I think after, you know, lots of feedback from, you know, fans and stuff like that, telling us what they enjoy more of and less of. And I think we kind of put together and what's been neat about it is we've never structured anything. We've never, you know, just like how we did it with you right now. We just, this is how we do every episode. We put the mics on, headphones on, and then we just kind of let it go. And I think the best feedback we've ever gotten is that authenticity, is that, man, you guys keep it real. And you know, and we're the first ones to admit our flaws, and we, and people just appreciate that. There's just not a lot out there. There's not a lot of genuine, real people out there that are starting businesses. It's always got an angle, and it always comes off that way.
Well, I think it's important when you tell people about, you know, starting businesses that most of us don't know what the fuck we're doing. Yeah. We don't know. Like, you start and you have no idea, and you learn as you go along. Mm. And that's a lot of what entrepreneurship is. That's 100%. A big part of
There's both sides, because I feel like that's what we have in common, because obviously the five of us in this room right now are a lot like that. But there's the other side of people that are like the, you know, total overanalyze everything and build a business plan out and say they've got everything mapped out before they even think about putting one foot in. You know, we're the opposite. You know, we're like, oh, we'll figure it out. We'll run into a few walls and then we'll fucking figure it out. You know, we like to learn the hard way, but that's just, I mean, to each their own. You know, everyone has a different style about how they approach things. And I think what has drawn all of us together is we all kind of have a similar mentality there, right. But we all have little pieces that are different. Justin and Doug are definitely more like each other than that. And you and I are definitely more like each other and winging it more.
So I heard you on another podcast a while ago tell some stories about growing up.
GDS. Yes.
And you you've been stabbed a bunch of times.
Yeah, shot. Been shot.
Right? Been shot.
Kidnapped.
We have to talk about that. You were kidding about that.
Hold on a second. Stabbed, shot, and kidnapped.
Yeah.
And not on the same night.
We already covered that he's a lord. Yeah. So he rose again from the dead.
Yeah.
So God kind of owed you with the tsunami and shit like that.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like,
I see.
I put my time in, God. Come on. Give me something here.
Yeah. As a kid, I had no luck. As an adult, I've been incredibly lucky. Like, without question, there's some serious karma. Backlash. I grew up in this area, Brooklyn Rugby, which is like, I don't know, I'm told it's a lot like Brooklyn in the US.
Right,
like
right.
It's these tower blocks and we're all a very tight community and it's run by gangs and our gangs are numbered. So we got the 32s, the 34 and the 36. The 32 robs you. The 34 robs you, rapes you and kills you. The 36 kills you, robs you and rapes you. That's a little scary. It's like, okay,
hey man, hey,
yeah, there's no need for that.
Yeah. Although crossing the line,
in fairness, I'd rather be killed and then raped than right. the other round. But true. Still, it's like a real big thing. And also, when they this is a horrible topic. When they rape you, they only do it in missionary style. So you can look them in the eyes.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty heavy. That's you know what? Twisted shit.
When I think about that, I would prefer from the back.
Yeah, you know?
I don't want to see what's going on.
I
don't,
no, just
no connection
there.
Yeah.
So I grew up in this really bad neighborhood and my grandfather worked for the council. So because of that, we had the only house surrounded by this block. And that was a big thing. This whole kind of, we were kind of separate, but not separate and part of the whole thing. Anyway, my dad he brings in Irish whiskey into Southern Africa. So we blow up. We literally become bootleggers. We go from restaurant to restaurant saying, can we get an Irish coffee? They bring it over. He sips it. He goes, that's not Irish coffee. They bring out the whiskey. He goes, that's Scottish whiskey. Have you tried this? It's called Jameson's. And also I've got this American thing called Wild Turkey Bourbon. Mm. And they're like, oh, wow, that's amazing. And he's like, I have a whole bunch of it in my car. And we go back and we get it. So eventually we move. We get out. And my dad says to me, never go back. Like, that's the only rule. Never go back. I'm 12 years old. We've just moved to this new area. I miss my friends. I miss my area. And I think, I'm going to go back. So I you know, jump a bus and I jump a train and I get back to my area and I go tell my friends, listen, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. And they're like, blood in, blood out. And I was like, I don't know. What does that mean? Is that like a new thing that's come up out of somewhere? And next thing I know.
Because you left the neighborhood.
Because you leave the neighborhood and you cut yourself to come in. And they've got to get something when you go out. But I didn't realize that they kill you when you leave. So, yeah, they stripped a gun in front of me. And it was so quick. It was unbelievable. And it was myself and something, a friend of mine. And put the gun back together and shot me. But, like, in seconds. It was literally like, bam, 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 bam. Boom, boom, two shots. And I remember just thinking, this is insane. Now, I've got to stop the story here because this is the story I tell everyone, okay? And it's 80% true. the 20% that isn't true, I only do because my dad listens to some of the shows that I'm on and I never want to upset him. But the 20% that isn't true is the woman that ran that gang was my mother.
Wow.
Yeah. So she ran a little gang in my neighborhood. So she was the actual woman that shot me. She's also the woman that kidnapped me. She's not the person that stabbed me, thank God.
So you were, wait, hold on. Whoa. She shot you?
She shot me. Yeah. Which is pretty frightening.
That's heavy.
But was it like this was teaching you a lesson? Was that like
she was going to kill me.
Straight gangster.
Oh, she's old OG.
Whoa.
She was so full on. Like,
this is like the craziest
gangster
movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, she was a.
Where did you get hit?
Mutter. So two shots through the chest. I got two bullet holes. And we call it. So it goes in like a coin, comes out like a cash register.
Right.
So it's a hollow point bullet. So as it goes in, it opens up
right,
and then comes out the back. And so this is 1990. This is 1990, so a lot of you are still stains in your father's pants. But
it was like 10, this is, bro.
Yeah, so sorry, man. So like, as I'm sitting in the hospital, I'm bleeding out. I'm holding my finger to the bullet wound, thinking that's going to stop it. My T-shirt is covered in blood. And I'm sitting in this corridor. And just so happens, there was a gang war the same day in the hospital. And running towards me is Pamela Anderson from Baywatch.
Thank God.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
She got a little red bikini bottom. Massive chest bouncing towards me. Mm. And as it's coming closer, I'm saying, wow, God,
slowly,
you've sent
right?
an angel. Very yeah. slowly. Yeah. You've sent an angel to take me. Thank God it's Pam Lance. Just take me home. And as it gets to me.
On your pillows.
As it gets to me, it's my dad. It's my dad's face
Wait.
With Pamela's body. And I'm thinking, I'm bleeding out, right? I'm dying. This
You're
is a hallucination.
Hallucinating.
Yeah, 100%. And then my dad starts talking and he's crying and he's like, how many have been shot? And I, what's going on? Have you been helped? And I'm like, Dad, do you know that you're not wearing any pants? And he's like, I'm a lifesaver. I'm wearing red Speedos. And my dad's a bodybuilder. He's got this massive chest. And my brain, lots of blood, 12 years old, slightly horny, is like, it must be Pam. Those are nipples. I can see nipples. I can hardly see my dad because he's wearing a budgie smuggler. And it's ice cold in the hospital, according to him. Yeah. And he's like, run in to save me from the beach. And anyway, gets a doctor. And the doctor puts me in a chair. And he's like, why is he on a chair? And they're like, well, because the bullet goes through your lung and you bleed to death internally. And I didn't have medical aid. And in South Africa, if you got medical aid, you'll be saved. And if you don't, you can't pay for medical, they put you in
this
your
chair.
This
is in South Africa.
This is in South Africa, in the hood. And he was like, what can I do? And they were like, get more money, get good medical aid. And he's like, well, how long is that going to take? And they were like, you'll die before you get good medical aid. So that's it. And he ran out and he saw a loan shark and he got some cash and he got me in the car and we took me to a private hospital. And I just lay there. And it's funny because I was talking to this woman yesterday about it. And I was saying, when you're going to die, people talk about the memories, you know, the flashes, you'll see the moments. But what I got is regret, just so much regret. The first girl I never kissed in primary school, the you know, not holding hands, the so many things, like telling my dad I loved him, hugging my family enough. And I made all these promises. I was like, if I survive this, I'm going to travel nonstop. If I survive this, I'm going to be a millionaire. If I survive this, I'm going to, you know, just anything I think of, I'm going to do, no matter how ridiculous, crazy, stupid, mad. If I put down that I'm going to meet the Dalai Lama, I'm going to meet the freaking Dalai Lama because I've only got one shot at this. Like, and this is my third time that I was on death's door. And I was just like, that's enough now. Three times is too many times.
Wow.
And that's been a catalyst to almost everything I've done. Like, even if I'm nervous before something, I always think to myself, you know, you should have been dead at 12. So this is all bonus time. Just do as much as you can, and you know, you're not going to get out alive.
And so I'd like to think that Pamela really saved you.
Oh my God, yeah.
I'm gonna be honest.
when I met Pamela Anderson, she did a club opening in London, and I went over.
You told her the story.
I told her the story. No. She said she just started giggling, and she's like, "Oh, that's so sweet." And what was your dad's legs like? And I was like, "Really small. Like, he's a tank top bodybuilder, so it's all about chest, shoulders, arms, stomach." I was like, "He doesn't care about his legs." And she's like, "Oh wow, what do the breasts look like?" And I was like, "I don't really sure. Can I see yours?
Compare them. Compare and control."
She's like, yeah, go out and buy a Playboy magazine, dude. but it was a hell of a thing. It was a definite thing.
So that definitely propelled you.
Oh wow!
And motivated the hell out of you
massively.
Yes. See, that's all we got to do is get shot.
I guess.
And then I think we'll be good.
Yeah, I think you guys are doing well. You've been shot out of the cannon. Absolutely.
How long ago was it when you and I first connected? It's been almost 2 years, wasn't it?
So the first,
do you remember? Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So my girlfriend at the time is now my wife. Said, so have you seen this guy on Instagram? We love to hate Adam. And I was like, no, I don't really look at dudes on Instagram. in fact, I got a funny story for Sel, and this is the exact same thing. So anyway, she's like, you got to see him because he's done the same thing as you. He's like, he's blown up and he's planning to lose weight. And I was like, well, I've never been in great shape. And she's like, well, he's got a plan to be in really great shape. And he's done it before. He's a personal trainer. And it looks like he's in gym membership or something. Or he's mentioned gym. So I started following you like immediately going, you know, good luck, take care. But then I kind of just watched. And next thing I knew, you were just like, fuck me, just incredible. And I was like, holy shit. And then I kept checking it out. And then because I'm on Instagram, I'm looking at girls, whatever. So all of a sudden, like my wife shows me this picture of Sal. And she goes, so you're following these girls. I'm following this guy named Sel. And I'm like, wait, doesn't Sel know Adam? And she's like, hashtag level up. And I was like, hey, there's the same kind of community. And then that was the whole thing. And I was like, following you, and I was following you, and I was following you. And you guys started mentioning Justin. And I started following Justin.
Yeah.
And then I started watching the whole thing.
I came in as the side piece.
You did come in as the
side piece. It's a very ongoing thing.
Yeah. And then you started mentioning just like all kinds of things. And my wife's obsessed with bulldogs. And my last car was your exact car.
Oh, no way.
So she was like, is that the same car you used to have? And I was like, yeah, he does. Like, that's amazing. And I wasn't on Instagram before that. Like, Instagram wasn't a thing. And I watched, like, even with yours, you started with like one-liners in your description, right. Sal. And next thing you know, you had like full stories, which you had right from the beginning. You always had it like a narrative.
Yeah.
It was this constant story you were on. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, and I don't know if you've had this in the Mind Pump episode and I've missed it. Where did We Love to Hate Adam come from?
It started in the company that we all used to work for. We all used to work for 24 Hour Fitness. And I kind of... all of us had done really well. I had set a bunch of records in my company. And at one point, I kind of got blackballed. I made a really stupid decision when I was, 23 years old. I was managing. And I had already bought my house at that time. And I used to bring my staff over for, you know, once every like quarter or so, and I'd throw a big barbecue and this and that.
Cocaine parties.
They were really low key. I mean, I normally would host it around a UFC fight or something. It was just an opportunity for me to kind of, you know, take care of them and stuff like that and keep that bond and relationship. And, you know, I never really thought nothing. And there was always alcohol there, but it was not like a rager. I wasn't throwing a big party. And there was this this one time that I did, and one of my front desk girls ended up filing for rape against one of my trainers who supposedly forced himself on her on my property. And it was outside my house, but it was right outside my house. It was during my event and everything. And I almost lost my job. And the only reason why I didn't lose my job was because I was a top performer in the area. And at that point, from that point on in my career, I was always kind of blackballed. I was because when I originally got into the company, I had ambitions to be a vice president and I wanted to move all the way up. I was very ambitious at a young age and thought it was something that I was on route to do. And it wasn't until probably my mid to later 20s that I realized that, you know, I was never going to go anywhere with this company because, you know, I was blackballed for what had happened. They were going to keep me because I produced so much revenue.
Absolutely.
And so that kind of started.
That's when you became a dick.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's well, probably.
I bet you.
Well, yeah, you know, right around 25, 26, you know, I started to that's when it kind of hit me that like, I'm not going anywhere. And it was probably best and worst time of my life because what had happened to me was I'd realized that I was no longer going to grow within this company. And because I wasn't going to grow within them, I had allowed them to keep myself from growing internally. And at that moment, that's when I really started reading and I started like reaching out and thinking outside the box and started starting other little businesses. And I'm like, all right, I'll work here and I'll make my decent money working for this company, but I'm no longer going to look at this as like my, you know, end all. And I'm going to be looking for other things and continue to grow myself. And, you know, and so then I always had this kind of chip on my shoulder that, you know, they would never fire me. They would never get rid of me because I outproduced anybody and everybody in the area. And I kind of carried myself that way where it's like, okay, well, you're going to get just enough out of me that I outproduce everybody, but you're not going to get all of me because, you know, you don't deserve it. And so we always had this, we love to hate. My boss,
I get all of you all the time.
my boss hated me and loved me at the same time. I pushed back on everything. Anytime he rolled out something or he wanted us to adhere to something, I was always the guy that said, fuck that, I'm doing it my way. And I always did it my way and I always did it better than everybody else did. And so it was kind of like this constant like butting heads, but then allowing me to
we're
do
all
whatever.
Kind of horrible with authorities.
Picking
line.
Up on that.
Yeah. And it just kind of stuck with me. And then I turned it into a business with my clients because I used to talk to them about that when we'd be training. I said, you know, hate me today, love me tomorrow. You know, because you're going to hate me while I'm pushing you through your workouts, but you're going to love me when you see the change in the results.
Yeah.
So then it kind of just stuck. And then my clients would always say that, oh, we love to hate you. Oh, we love to hate you. And so that's when I started my business, I started it under We Love to Hate It. I kind of already had the reputation and then it just kind of took off. And then when Instagram, and of course, when I first started on social media, a lot of people didn't know the origins of it. And you know, it rubbed some people the wrong way because, you know, they figured it was very egotistical and whatever. You know, I don't give a fuck. So at the end of the day, it's
they're all dicks.
Yeah. No, you know, at the end of the day, it's what motivates me. I like it when somebody, you know, underestimates me or thinks that way. I mean, it's always stuck with me. And I feel like it doesn't matter what I've been doing or what company I'm working for or a part of. I kind of find myself in that situation, and it's hard. And I feel like all like type A personalities, I feel like, can kind of relate. Mm. And I feel like whenever you work for somebody or a company, you want a guy almost like me, but not quite like me, because a guy like me needs freedom. And I want to do what I want to do, and I want to create, and I want to evolve. And most companies don't want that. Most companies want you to fall in line.
If a company's smart and they get people like you, they make sure they pay you and they promote you and 100%. They give you lots and lots and lots of opportunities, because otherwise that person's going to learn and they're going to leave.
Yeah.
I'd have
and
people
take
like
people
that.
With them.
Yeah. I'd have people like that work for me. I'd hire people. You know, there's a few general managers I promoted because I'd hire them. And I'm like, I'm not going to be able to keep them on my gym. This person's way too good. I'm going to promote them and get them to move on and up on their own. That way the company can keep them at least.
You're also smart and talented, so you understand that and see that, you know, that's very...
I agree.
And so humble.
Yeah.
Super humble.
And the only reason why I really got rid of We Love to Hate was because at one point, and then when I got into competing, I even had that chip on my shoulder in competing. So even when I was competing, I chose to go the path with, you know, everybody gets a coach. Everyone has a coach. Everyone has a team. You know, that's all part of the politics in it. That way you can politic and rub elbows with the right people. Yeah. And they know you're sponsored by this. And I wanted to do it all alone. I wanted to do it the hard. And everybody thought I was crazy. When I first said I was going to set out to do this, they're like, you've never competed before. One, you're going to coach yourself. Two, you think you're no sponsor, no team, no nothing. You ain't going to do shit. Which, of course, that just motivated me even more, you know, to do that. And, you know, and long story short, that's why I went through the whole league like that. And to me, it was never like I had this, you know, burning desire to be a competitor or anything like that. And we're kind of on to the next thing. And once Mind Pump grew from that, and it actually outgrew my name and reputation in competing, it was like, okay, well, that was what it was all about originally. It was always about this ultimate goal of what we're doing now.
I wanted to ask you again about as far as like you're creating this app, right? The process with getting venture funded, angel funding, like self-funding. I know that these are topics you brought up on your podcast. And you know, myself included, I'm going through this process as well, like self-funding and then, you know, considering all these options that are out there. I know you had some people on the show giving you one side of the coin versus the other. Like, what is your opinion as it sits right now with that?
So my opinion as it sits now is prove cost of client acquisition. Like,
explain that.
So, okay. So Mark Cuban's big thing is it's not about the idea. It's not about can you action it. It's not about can you create it. It's about how much does it cost to get the first client to buy it. So let's perfect example. No BS abs.
Right.
Mind Pump. So if you work out, how much does it cost you to get? It's an absolute pleasure. Yeah. My favorite thing. Great. Closest I've ever been to a six pack.
yes.
So you look at how much does it cost you to get that first person to buy the product and then to grow the product, right? So let's say it takes 5 of these shows, 5 hours of time, plus editing, plus everyone coming down here, plus you stop working and everything else that you're doing to be here. Times it by 4. What is the exact value of that to sell one? Now, work that by how many you've sold, how much time you've given it, what does it work out to per piece? So that's what Mark Cuban does for every single piece of business he looks at.
I see.
What is the cost of client acquisition? They call it CLAC, and CLAC is a massive word at the moment. So the second piece is the education piece. Okay, so not the cost of them buying it, but the cost of them understanding what you're doing. So, you know, and again, with something like losing weight, it's a lot easier because we all know what that is, or getting in shape. But maybe something like Uber is a big education piece, or famously PayPal. So PayPal, great example. He gave $10 to every single person because he was like, well, that's it. All I need to do is I'll tell you, hey, you know, join PayPal, get $10. Mm-hmm. Shit, that cost me nothing.
The banks have kind of used that model too, right?
100%.
Yeah. And cell phone companies, same thing too. They give you $50 credit on your cell.
So you buy it. And then also that gives you the third thing, which Seth Godin calls the stickiness factor. So that's why Instagram became so big, because I'd get on Instagram and I'd be like, dude, you need to be on Instagram. So then I'll get to Instagram and I'll tell my friend. And there's a sticky sort of thing of growth. And the stickiness helps with your client cost of acquisition, because I'm no longer paying you to get someone else on board. You're telling someone else and they're telling someone else. So when I first started and I was talking to everyone about funding and what should I do and how should I fund and should I get investors? And I've got this guy who's interested. I know this millionaire and da da da. And they were like, honestly? And I was like, yeah, honestly, what should I do? And they were like, honestly, get the first 100 clients. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm charging $1,000 a client, 100 clients. That's 10K. Mm-hmm. If I can prove I can do 10K, I can prove it can be 100K. If I can prove I can 100K, I can get $1 million. If I can get $1 million, I can get 10 million. Mm.
Jesus, more of a ladder.
So that's all it is. Yeah, it's that first piece. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to interview this woman called Hermione Way. And Hermione Way came up with a vibrator called the Wee Vibe.
Yeah, I know what that
tell
is.
Me about. Do you know? Well, of course you do.
I love how Sel straightened his legs when he said that. He's like, yeah, yeah. Exactly what that is. I'm using it right now.
clenched a little bit there.
You can use your cell phone to turn it on, gentlemen.
You can actually use it. Did I'll call you really right know now. About this shit?
I know a lot of random
dude,
shit.
Wait. That's real?
That's a real thing. So she invented this thing because she had a boyfriend in London and she was in Silicon
Valley.
Listen,
I know a lot of random shit.
You've proven that time and time again.
Of course you know that one.
So instead of going to funding, she did the whole thing herself. She bootstrapped it from nothing to $1 million in sales in a year. Online revenue. Yeah, incredible. Yeah. But now, then she immediately got funding. She got funding for $15 million. Because it was like, well, you've proved the concept. You've proved client acquisition.
How much did she keep as far as equity? And
well,
all that?
Weirdly enough, she had a long-term plan. Okay. So if you look up Hermione Way today, she is CEO of Tinder for Europe. So that was her long-term plan. Mm. If she can show that she can do it herself on her own product, she could go and join a global franchise like Tinder, which is phenomenal.
Wow.
And yeah, and then go, well, I can do it for you. And obviously earn more, not have the sleepless nights, be a full-time mom, well, part-time mom.
Okay.
So she's a mumpreneur.
Yeah, it's an interesting strategy. I
So the best, from everything I could find out and from everyone I spoke to, the best way to raise money for any given product is prove you can make money from the product first.
I mean, that's a lot of like what I've heard. I mean, and especially in order to like proof of concept, right? I mean, how else are you going to do that other than actually showing sales and showing the need and the market value of it. I mean, you can't establish that unless you put it out there in the market and let them determine that, right?
There
has to be some element of self-funding, but then, you know, maybe you visit that as you look for growth, right?
Yeah. We're talking about this today. I was talking to these massive investors and they were explaining the difference between a 90s kid and a millennial. So a 90s kid does what they call the field of dreams creation. You heard of this?
No.
So any guess what field of dreams creation is?
They will come.
Boom. Yeah. Okay. So we from the 90s and stuff, we build a product. We think it's amazing. We stick it to market and we wait for them to come and get it. Y Combinator, Google's genius Hogwarts for startups, says bullshit. You put it out there like it exists and you let the market respond. And if the market comes back and says, we all want Mind Pump's product, you go out and you create the Mind Pump product. But you don't make it first because why are you wasting the time? It might not work.
Yeah.
Well, I just had a paradigm destruction right now.
Listen, the whole
when we turn these mics off, I'm writing some shit on that board.
I think I wrote this to Justin on his Instagram. Is the best thing about and I'm sure you guys find this for the podcast. The best thing about the podcast for me is that I've been able to talk to such incredible minds about parts of business I would never learn on my own. Mm-hmm. Like as successful I've been, it's in a bubble. I'm only learning about my one piece of information, my one piece, you know, about whatever I'm doing. And I'm not doing an MBA. I'm not sort of, you know, meeting these incredible lecturers and reading great course material. But now by interviewing people who are top VCs or who own incredible products.
So much better.
Wealth of information.
So much better that way.
Yeah. And they've done it. They've been in the trenches.
Exactly.
And although everyone keeps talking about now the buzzword of, you know, you learn from your failures, what they've said to me is bullshit. You learn from your successes.
Yeah.
Every time you get it right, you do it again. How often, you know, do you go back and go, oh, I need to remember that one time I shouldn't have put really small stick-ons. I should have really used a bikini. That wasn't even waterproof. But our YouTube numbers are really high.
Oh, yeah.
So that has been a big piece, like this whole thing of testing. MVP, minimum viable product. Get it to market, test the crap out of it, bring it back.
So, Jay, how old are you?
So I'm 40 years old.
Okay, so... you know, being our age, even a little bit older than us, you know, how fascinated are you with the whole social media and how business is evolving that way? Like,
well, like you said, like Twitter really is your channel,
medium.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, number one in the world now, 9 months, longest ever in Twitter's lifespan in events, influential in events. I'm number one in the world. I've only got like I think it was 44,000 followers. But like, and I was saying this to someone the other day, they were like, oh, how come you got 44,000, you're number one in the world, and I've got a million, and I'm number three in the world? And I was like, well, who would you rather be, Hitler or Jesus? Jesus had 12 followers and he was a powerful dude. Oh, wow.
Kaboom.
Bam.
Head explode.
Yeah. Drop the mic. Drop the mic right there, dude.
I'm out of here.
I'm walking on water, son.
I'm gone, man.
That's right.
And he was like, if I tell my followers to go on Instagram or check something out, they go and check it out. Where you tell your followers and you've got maybe 100,000 spam bots who aren't doing a thing. So that social media is gigantic to me because, I mean, it's created this. I met my wife through social media. I did an event for Burberry.
Really?
That's awesome. So my girlfriend at the time was dating this Dutch model, and she went to this event in my proxy. I couldn't go. I was doing something else. And she came home and she said, I just saw this 6'1" blonde that would, in fact, I lie. She went, the 6'1" redhead that will blow your top. In fact, you'll marry her one day. And I was like, give me a number. Like, you know, maybe the three of us can have a dinner and we could like chat. And she was like, it's not going to happen. I know I'm Dutch, but it's not going to happen. And I tried to get her digits. I couldn't get her digits. And eventually a friend of mine was at the same party. And I was like, yeah, this girl, she's like 6'1", bright redhead, blue eyes. And he's like, oh, I know exactly who it is. But she only dates the stereotype. And I was like, well, what's the stereotype? He's like, got to be 6'4" and above, got to be American, got to have bulldogs. So I was really peeved when my wife started following you, Adam Schaefer.
I see where all
and
this
then I was really happy when I checked up Sal's stats and I was like, he's not over 6'2". I'm more dead. And she only dated like US Marines, firemen, army officials, all from like Georgia, Washington, New York City. So I couldn't get hold of her. And anyway, it was the World Cup. It was 2006, I think it was. And it's 2009. And I did an event for the Great Ormond Street Hospital, Reach for a Dream Foundation, which is a bunch of kids who are dying. And they wanted to go to a premiere. And I organized premieres all the time. So I went to a film company and there was a film called Goal 3. And we got the premiere of the thing and all the actors standing up, the director and the kids came. And as the kids came, I said, can we put the house lights on? And the whole back line was the entire English football team, from like David Beckham to Rio Ferdinand to Alex Ferguson to like every major football hero. And the kids were getting mad. And I wrote a story called I Met David Beckham. And the whole point of the story was, well, I met David Beckham. I don't really care about the story. Like, that's the point. Like, I met David freaking Beckham. And I said, all I need to meet now is Sean Connery and the Queen. And I've met like everyone on my bucket list. And this girl tweeted, I've met Sean Connery. And it was the picture of this redhead, blue eyes. Still got it on my phone.
Random.
And I was like, boom.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com. Until next time, this is Mind Pump.